2. Hennessy dreamt of the lace. It was always the same dream. It was dark. She was meaningless in this dream, not a cog in a machine, not a blade of grass in a field, possibly a speck of dust in the baleful eye of a loping beast blinked away, but nothing more. Slowly, the dream illuminated, and the light revealed a thing that had been there all along. A thing, an entity, a situation. Its edges were jagged and geometric, intricate and ragged. A snowflake beneath a microscope. It was enormous. Enormous, not like a storm or a planet, but enormous like grief or hatred. This was the lace. It was not really a thing one saw. It was a thing one felt. When Hennessy had first dreamt Jordan into being, Jordan slept curled up behind her, her presence at once comforting and off-putting. Comforting because she was warm, familiar, entirely the same as Hennessy, but also off-putting because Hennessy, used to sleeping alone for 10 years, would startle awake as Jordan's breath just barely moved the hairs on the back of her neck. It's impossible to prepare for the creeping strangeness of having dreamt a copy into being. Hennessy didn't know what she owed Jordan beyond a body here in the waking realm. She didn't know whether she and Jordan were going to be best friends or rivals. She didn't know if Jordan might try to usurp Hennessy's life. She didn't know what to do if Jordan rejected it and struck off on her own. She didn't know what to do if Jordan embraced it and stayed with Hennessy forever and ever and ever. It was possible she might never be alone ever again, but she didn't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing. That feeling, that was the lace. After Hennessy had first dreamt June, the second copy, she had padded down the hallway of her father's new suburban hole in the middle of the night, dragging her fingers across the wall because her mother had told her leaving oil on flat surfaces was a form of rebellion. And then suddenly she saw herself looming at the end of the hall. Impossible, she thought. I left Jordan in the room. And then she remembered June existed. But this was no comfort, because there should have never been another one after Jordan. And what if June wasn't a direct copy, but rather a monster with Hennessy's face? And what if there was going to be another copy after her? And another one? And then Hennessy began to scream, and scream, and scream, and June started to scream, and scream, and scream, until Hennessy's father shouted from his room, what in heaven's name, if she had a problem, come into the master and explain it to him, or quit raising the roof and let everyone sleep for God's sake. That feeling, that was the lace. Sometimes, when Hennessy's mother, J.H. Hennessy, had still been alive, she'd put a mink brush in her daughter's hand and instruct her on how to move it over a canvas she'd already started work on. Hennessy would be full of the pride and terror that came from knowing she was making marks on a painting meant for high rollers and fancy shows. For minutes or hours, she and her mother would work in soundless partnership on the canvas, until it was difficult to tell which one of them had made which mark. Then her father, Bill Dower, would come home, and as soon as the door closed behind him, Jay would snap at Hennessy and snatch her brush back with enough force to tip pallets and spatter canvases. Mother, gone. Wife, arrived. Jay was two different people, and the changeover was dramatic. Hennessy, too, changed over from heart and mouth joy to confused shame in a moment. That feeling, that was the lace. Hennessy had spent a decade torn between loving and resenting her clones, fearing they would leave her, wishing they would stop needing her, and then Jordan had told her they'd all been shot in the fucking face by moderators and she'd never see them again, so it became a moot point. That feeling, that was the lace. Huge, unavoidable, inevitable, exhausting. Hennessy, said Bride, just like that, the lace was gone. When Bride arrived in her dream, the lace always vanished. It was afraid of him. A neat trick. Hennessy wanted to know why. That's not important, Bride said. What do you feel? Since meeting Ronan and Bride, she'd spent more time than ever before wondering what it was like for other people to dream. She dreamt of the lace, always and forever, but most other dreamers had a different dream each night. Although she must have dreamt of something besides the lace at some point, she could neither remember nor imagine what that was like. She wondered how Ronan and Bride found her in dream space. They fell asleep, had their own dream, and then... Be present, Bride said. Stop wandering. How much power do you feel? A fuckload, Hennessy thought. Enough to dream something huge. Enough to bring the lace out in its entirety. Stop calling the lace, Bride said. I won't let it come back. I wasn't calling it. Bride smiled thinly. Other people revealed themselves when they smiled. Tough folks became teddy bears. Sentimental huggers revealed sharp-toothed gossips. Shy people showed goofy clowns. Class clowns turned out to be bitter depressants. But not Bride. He was an enigma before and an enigma after. Where is your voice? Be present. Now look, I've given you a canvas and you've left it blank. Bride said, gesturing around them. Now that the lace was gone, the dream held just their conversation, nothing else. Laziness is the natural child of success. Who, after struggling up the ladder, feels like building another ladder? The view is already good. You're not trying. Why? Hennessy's voice was still just thought. There's a word for someone who tries the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Artist, suggested Bride. You didn't used to mind failure. She was annoyed that he was right. Hennessy had spent her youth studying how pigment behaved, how badger bristles played paint versus squirrel versus hog versus Kolinsky sable, how complementary colors accentuated each other or canceled each other out, how the human skeleton was constructed beneath the skin, working on every flat surface that presented itself to her, trying, failing. She'd also spent an equal amount of time or more on training her mind. Perception and imagination were always the weakest link in any artist's chain. Eyes saw what they wanted to see instead of what was truly there. Shadows became too dark. Angles went crooked. Shapes got elongated, crushed. The brain had to be taught to see without feeling, and then to put feeling back in. Fail. Try again, fail, try again. She couldn't remember how she'd ever had the bandwidth to do that for so many hours and days and weeks and years. This is better, Bride said. The dream had become a studio. Hennessy hadn't consciously thought of putting them in a studio, but dreams were crafty bastards that way. They gave you what you wanted, not what you said you wanted. The studio was as good as reality. It smelled wonderful and productive, earthy and chemical. Multiple easels displayed canvases in all sizes. Paint glistened on palettes. Brushes stood on handles like bristled bouquets. Drop cloths covered the old wood floor. Bride sat in a chair next to a wall of windows, his legs crossed casually, arm across the back of the chair. Jordan would have said he'd make a good portrait subject. The view beyond him was a city of historical buildings and close-set trees and invading highways. A distant storm mounted, the clouds tattered and checkered. The dream was trying hard, in the way that dreams do, to imply that Hennessy had been to the studio before, although she knew she hadn't. "It's Jordan's studio," the dream said. "If you don't recognize it, it's only because it's been too long since you've seen her. Why don't you keep up with her like you used to?" Hennessy disagreed. "She doesn't keep up with me." "There you are. Found your voice," Bride said. "You are not two things. You are not Hennessy asleep and Hennessy awake. You are more than the sum of your feelings, your id. You are also the things you have learned to do about them. Dreaming, waking, they're the same thing for you. When will you believe it? Put something on that canvas. The ley line is listening. Ask it for what you want." Hennessy stood before a canvas as tall as herself. In her hand was a brush, which was also a knife. She could picture the feeling of the blade piercing the canvas, the way the weave would shrink back from the wound. How splendidly and dramatically it would ruin the perfect flat expanse of the canvas. "Let's have Hennessy the artist," Bride said sharply. "The Hennessy who creates instead of destroys. What would she do if she could do anything?" "Jordan's the one you're talking about," Hennessy said. "She's the artist. I'm the forger. There are not two of you." "You need glasses, mate," Hennessy said. "You were an artist before you made Jordan." But Hennessy couldn't remember that far back, not in a meaningful way. "Fine," Bride said, annoyed. "Show me what she would do right now. I assume she listens better." How would Jordan use this dream space? What if Hennessy were the dream, and Jordan were the one with all this incredible power and state? "Art," Jordan had told Hennessy once, "is bigger than reality." The knife disappeared. Hennessy was already painting. Beneath the brush's soft bristles was a rich stripe of gorgeous purple, a purple no human had ever seen before. Jordan would love it. Tyrian purple looked dowdy beside this color. Why hadn't Jordan tried harder to come with Hennessy on this latest adventure? "You know why," the dream snarled. Jordan had taken off with Declan Lynch after mounting only the lamest of protests. She'd been waiting for an excuse to leave Hennessy for so long, and here it was. Outside, the storm grew closer, the edges of the clouds geometric and dark. "Stay on task," Bride ordered. The purple paint on the canvas bled into the shape of lush purple lips. Hennessy's lips. No, Jordan's. Nearly the same, but different in important ways. Jordan's lips smiled. Hennessy's forged smiles from looking at other people's mouths. Carefully, Hennessy added a shadow, giving the lips dimension. The inky black was darker and truer than any black paint could be in waking life. Bride stood so fast he knocked the chair over. "Yes, yes, that. This is what dreaming is for. Do not make a vegan copy of a burger. Eat a goddamn vegetable and love it." Had Declan kissed Jordan? Probably. Hennessy dipped her thumb in the pale feather pink on the palette, and then she swiped the pigment across the bottom lip. The highlight instantly rendered the mouth wet and full and anticipatory. It was more than real. It was super real. It wasn't just what lips looked like. It was what they felt like. It was image and memory and sensation all together in the way dreams could be. "Stop," Bride said. "That's what you're bringing back. Experience it. Don't let it change. Ask the ley line to help you. It can..." He broke off, and his expression went far away. Hennessy suddenly thought, out of nowhere, "Wheels." "Wheels?" Bride shouted. "Ronan Lynch, stop that!" She just had time to feel something a little like all the air going out of the room, which was funny because she hadn't been thinking about breathing in the dream. Then everything disappeared.